Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another Wednesday night live stream here on On Texas Football. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, joined by fellow Lifetime Longhorns Bobby Burton, who's down there at the SEC Spring Meetings, and my man CJ Vogel's always hard at work for you folks. We got actual big news on the recruiting trail for the Longhorns, another commitment and another one for the Longhorns. We'll talk about that and get CJ's thoughts. Also, we'll talk about what's going on at the spring meetings. CDC maybe bragging a little bit, already talking a little trash. I like that. We'll get into that too coming up a little bit on the show. And also the SEC celebration now, which has been announced on the 40 acres as well. So showing some SEC pride. We'll talk about that too as well. And all of your questions, all of your comments, of course, this Wednesday night live stream brought to you by Andy Ludicky. We'll tell you more about our fantastic sponsor in a second. Thank you guys for joining us, for participating in the show today. Please throw out as many questions as you want answered. We'll try to get to as many of them as we can. Of course, Super Chats jump to the front of the line. You can interrupt the show at any time. All right, you can do that with a Super Chat. All right, gentlemen, and good afternoon to everybody out there. How you doing, Bobby? How's the mood down there at the SEC spring meetings for the Longhorns?
Well, I think it's somewhat celebratory for the Longhorns. I talked to CDC, Chris Del Conte, today. I also spoke to president of the university, Jay Hartzell, today briefly. And I think it's fair to say both are excited to be in a new place in the SEC. I think that from talking to Chris Del Conte, he's trying to look at the macro, while a lot of the coaches are concerned with things like what's going to happen with NIL, and what about roster reductions and roster restrictions, as maybe they want to call it now going forward in football. CDC had a more macro perspective. He definitely thinks that, look, we're going to get there. I don't know what it's going to look like, but we're going to get there and have a game played. Someone asked him, what's the most exciting thing about joining the SEC? And his response was perfect, Rod and CJ. It was the games. He goes, who doesn't want to see Georgia come to Texas? What Texas fan doesn't want to go to A&M and Arkansas? You know, there's a reason for that. Jay Hartzell was complimentary of the SEC overall, said that he felt like it was a very holistic approach on the week for him and the presidents and of the university. So they listened to a group of athletes come in and talk to them, the presidents, about their, you know, needs and issues that they saw. Then they also talked to the chief medical officer to talk about that over all of the sports. I mean, he felt like it was a really well-run, well-organized, highly organized, he called it, event. And emblematic of a first-rate conference that they've joined in the SEC. So Take away NIL issues and what that might look like, scholarship reductions. Today, I felt like between the athletic director at Texas, Chris Del Conte, and the president, Jay Hartzell, it took up more of a celebratory tone, even in the face of some potential turmoil behind the scenes or underneath the surface with the roster reductions, et cetera.
Yeah, we'll get to that next. I know there's a lot of questions about, even Sark talked about the roster limits. That was one of the big topics of conversation. You said it as well, Bobby, in your time there, coaches, a lot of concern about roster limits and what the roster size restrictions, what that could end up being. Also, I heard Sark, I love that Sark yesterday in the interview that you posted, that he was so upfront about a lot of the things that he was concerned about. He talked about the calendar as well. It's something that probably the second most important thing that he wants clarity on down there at the SEC spring meetings too. So seems like there's just a lot of uncertainty right now about the future of college football and maybe the SEC spring meetings. You're going to get a little bit more information and clarity about what that's going to look like. But let's talk about what recruiting looks like for the Longhorns. Really quickly, because we know what that looks like. Right now, it's a short choice. He is cleaning up. He seems he's one of those guys right now that has to be one of the top recruiters in the country for any position, for any program. And he gets another one, CJ. This time, James Simon commitment for the Longhorns, 4-star running back commitment. Talk about James Simon, what he brings to the table. How did this commitment go down for the Longhorns?
Yeah, Texas did a great job in this one, going out of state to secure yet another running back in this class. Of course, Ricky Stewart already in the fold out of Chapel Hill and Tyler. Now you go out down that I-20 corridor a little bit to Shreveport, Louisiana, and add a pretty nice complimentary back to what you already have with Ricky Stewart, now in James Simon. And, of course, we've talked about it at length so far this week, but Tashard Choice, he's really – Jerry and I had this point earlier – you could look at Jordan Davison as really the one guy since he's been here that he's pursued and not necessarily landed. And right now, if you go 6 for 7 at any position in your tenure at the University of Texas, you're going to do pretty darn well. And so far, that's exactly the case. Of course, things really started moving in the right direction a little earlier on in the spring. Simon made it to campus for the spring game April 20th. Gave a silent commitment then, and then Tashard Choice visited him very quickly after that, that Tuesday, the next week after, down in Shreveport, Louisiana, kind of a celebratory meet up once again at his high school at Calvary Baptist Academy. And now Texas again, really, really talented two-back class. I'm not sure if that's going to be the sign for every single cycle, but it might as well be, Bobby, when and Rod, whenever you have as many guys come in and out to the NFL, of course, it makes sense to come in and load up. Texas already has a commitment in the 26th class. That's Racine Guillory out of Aledo. And they're hosting a number of really talented running backs again June 1st for the Elite Camp. Tre'Darrion Ball out of Texas High, KJ Edwards out of Carthage, Isaiah Young out of San Marcos. That's really, really impressive group at the moment. And, of course, that 27 group with Jacoby Dixon, Isaiah Crowell out of Alabama, that group goes on and on. So Tashard Choice for the class of 2025, he's done. He's got his guys. He'll be helping load up the rest of that group for the 2025 class. And we've seen him be a pretty instrumental piece already, right? He's been on the road hitting up Brandon Baker, Emory Winston, KJ Lacy. When coaches were able to take that first stop in the wintertime, he was out there checking in on those big recruits. Michael Fosu-Ussi as well. In-state. He's got a great personality. Recruits kind of relate to him very well. And if you've heard anything from Jonathan Brooks, Bijan Robinson, Roshan Johnson, CJ Baxter, or Jaden Blue in the past, they'll all back that up. And I think right now you're seeing that pay dividends in the world of recruiting. And I think this group is a really talented group between the two running backs.
Man, great stuff there, CJ. I want to ask you, Bobby, they got a lot of great recruiters on this staff. Is Tashard Choice the best recruiter on the staff?
Ooh.
I know Jeff Banks is a rainmaker too.
Let's say this. That's a great question, first of all, in my opinion, Rod. There's two different types of recruiters typically in life. And you know this, Rod. I mean, you've dealt with one. Tim Brewster was the tight end coach that recruited everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeff Banks is Steve Sarkisian's version of that. So he's that guy that is the tight end coach, but recruits whoever Coach Sarkisian says we need, that's who we're going to go get, right? Especially on that I-20 corridor that we talk so much about in South Dallas, okay? And so the difference, you also have recruiters that are excellent recruiters at their position, okay? Yeah. And that's the current place where I would put not only a Tashard Choice, but frankly, a Kyle Flood.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. They recruit their position as well, in my opinion, as anybody in the country. Okay. So roll out whoever you want against them at their two positions.
Yeah.
And I think Kyle Flood recruits the best. And I think Tashard Choice recruits the best. Now you can argue one, you know, they may get one player over another. They may like one player over another, et cetera. The thing that I see with Tashard Choice, and CJ made mention of this, is that I see Sark trying to take what Tashard Choice is able to do at running back and start to spread him to more positions.
Yeah, I got you.
I don't know that he's there yet, like a Jeff Banks, right? Yeah. To CJ's point, he's just being called upon to really do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you ask me this question in 3 years, I might have a different answer.
I got you.
That's my gut feel on Tashard Choice. He's going from he's in the process. Not saying he's always only recruited one position, or not. There's no absolutes. But I think he, as a coach, is in the process of going from that guy that owns his position as well as anybody in the country to that guy that can recruit anybody in the country. And it's not an overnight thing. I mean, it takes time. It takes the head coach to endorse you to do that, right? And I think Tashard Choice, in very short time frame, not, you know, it has gotten that kind of level of trust from his head coach to go be the next, okay, let's go talk to you, and you go down and talk to Brandon Baker, since we don't have a defensive line coach yet, right? Yeah. What he did. And so, good question. Who's the best recruiter? Right now, I would say Jeff Banks overall, because I think he's got more skins on the wall, and he's been doing it longer. From a position perspective, I would say both Choice and Kyle Flood are pretty special.
Good stuff. That's breakdown there. I appreciate that, Bobby. All right, we'll get to some of your questions. I see them piled up, and we got a super chat here that we got to get to. Before we do that, I want to ask you guys about CDC. CDC was – he's feeling real good. I can tell because you had a couple of pictures, Bobby, of CDC out there. You know, he looks like he's at home amongst the SEC officials and everyone. But he was sitting down actually with Paul Feinbaum and actually started talking a little trash about the Texas OU game. He was just talking about the – more not the game itself, the competition, but more of the spectacle and the rivalry itself. And he didn't say it, but he implied that the Texas OU game is basically the best rivalry right now in the SEC. It's going to be the best spectacle among those rivalries. He brought up the Iron Bowl. He brought up the cocktail party. And honestly, this year, so I want to ask you guys this question because I'm going to, you know, kind of piggyback on CDC swagger here. Is it possible, look at the competition level to us, look at the teams, and right now where they are, the state of their programs right now as well, and talk about the actual spectacle of the event. I mean, does Texas have right now the two best rivalry games in the SEC in their first year?
No.
Give me one that's going to be better than Texas.
So I would put Texas OU up against anything, whether the teams are any good or not. You know, that's how I was raised, frankly. Right. I mean, that's just the way of the world. I was on Feinbaum's show earlier this afternoon as well. And I tell you what, I was sitting between Paul Feinbaum and a guy named Tony Barnhart. Okay. Those two guys are going to forget more about media in college football than most people ever remember. I mean, it's just, they've been there, done that. And to be fair, you know, it sounds like Chris was a little glib in that commentary to Paul about the Texas OU rivalry. And not only did Paul take offense to that, talking about the Iron Bowl, but Tony Barnhart was like, hey, it ain't nothing. I've been to the Red River Shootout. It ain't nothing to Florida, Georgia, and the cocktail party. So yeah. I'm telling you now, some feathers are going to be ruffled. But I think Chris was just being his normal. He can be glib at times, purposely, but he's purposely glib, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He walked into the meetings today with flip-flops and his shorts on and everything else. Some other people in there buttoned up all the way to the top. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, what you got a true sense of with Chris down there. And then, I mean, just look. I've been here for 3 days now, and I think that the thing that I take away, one of the things I take away from these meetings, are the quality of individuals that you meet are pretty high. And I don't say that to say that the guy at Kansas State isn't good or whatever, because, you know, some are, some aren't, no matter where you're at. It's just like at the Big 12 meetings, maybe – one out of every eight big name writer would be there, right? One out of eight. Well, here, eight out of eight are there. And they're running around working just as hard as the guy that's just trying to get his first job. You know what I mean? And so Then you see not only the athletic directors, you see the women athletic directors, you see the women's basketball coach, you see the men's basketball coach, you see Steve Sarkisian. But the biggest, probably the most stark contrast between these conferences that Texas is leaving and coming into is the guy that leads it, the commissioner. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Big 12 has a carnival barker as the lead. Okay. The SEC has a serious person. Has a serious person, lawyer, knows what the hell he's doing, been through it. You know, it's just a different, more classy, in my opinion, feel overall. And you get that from the start of this event to the, I'm 2 days, 3 days into it now. It's just a totally different feel than what you're used to.
Yeah. Good stuff there. Hey, CJ, if you had to rank the SEC rivalries this year, how are you going to rank them?
That's interesting. You know, it's really interesting, and I think it all depends. You know, there's very few rivalries in the world of college football that don't take dips because a team is down. You know, I think the game Michigan-Ohio State, that will always be heightened to the extent, regardless of teams are up or down in a given season. I think Texas-Oklahoma is very similar to that. Obviously, Florida-Georgia. Auburn-Alabama, I think, at times can dip a little bit. They obviously hate each other. They're in the same state. The stadium is going to be filled regardless. But I think that environment at times can get a little low. It took a last-second touchdown this year for that environment really to stay up in where it was, even with Auburn in contention to knock off a top five, top six Alabama at the time. I think that one can slide a little bit. I'm going to be interested to see where Texas and Texas A&M fall in all of this, right? You know, that game coming back, I think – it's great to have the natural rivalries back in the SEC. Texas A&M, Texas and Arkansas. It felt like to me when Texas A&M first joined the SEC, they tried to force some rivalries, right? It was Texas A&M and Arkansas at Cowboys Stadium. It didn't feel natural. That game was very lopsided for the duration of its time being played in Dallas. Texas A&M and LSU, those teams don't have a history. There's no bad blood between the two, and yet that was always the game that you would see late in the season on rivalry week. It just didn't feel like a rivalry. Sure, the stadiums were packed. It was a big game. It was towards the end. It had a lot of implications on the conference championship, what the standings would look like going into a playoff perhaps, but it didn't have the hatred or the passion that you would see with these big games that we've talked about kind of leading the way for the rivalry. So I think Texas and Texas A&M, although I think it does take a little bit of a backseat to what we see in the Cotton Bowl every year, seeing this game return and having it on college campuses again, I think that's going to be really interesting, because who's going to be, you know, Arkansas's big rival now? Who's going to be LSU's big rival now? Is it Alabama? Well, Alabama's got Auburn. Well, you know, it kind of feels to me that Texas has a home with two really, really passionate rivalries, where a couple teams are now looking around with Texas and Oklahoma joining, thinking, oh, okay, maybe who we thought was going to be our big game every year is no longer going to be the case.
No, good stuff there, CJ. All right, we'll hold off on the questions because we got a very special guest that's going to interrupt the show. We're happy to be interrupted by the newest lifetime Longhorn and member of DBU. So I'm excited to talk to him. Javion Cole is joining us right now on the On Texas Football live stream. Javion, thank you for the time, bro. We appreciate it.
Thank you all for having me.
How you doing, Javion? Are you in Austin or are you in San Jose these days?
I'm officially in Austin. I got here last night around 10 o'clock, so it's my first day here.
Hey, Javion, I've got to ask you this question because I talked to Steve Sarkisian on Tuesday specifically about you, actually. It was a quick conversation. But I asked him, how does Javion Cole, how is he the Oakland Athletic League Player of the Year? How does he end up at Cal Poly his first year? And his response was, you know what? I don't know exactly. But I know that Cal Poly obviously did a good job, because not only did they get Javion, they got the other cornerback, and he's going to A&M nowadays. So how did you – I mean, I've asked this question. How did you end up at Cal Poly out of high school when you were, I mean, we've showed some of your high school highlights, Javion. They're pretty fantastic, man. How did you end up at Cal Poly?
Honestly, out of high school, I wasn't recruited highly. I don't think anybody from my class was really recruited highly. Everybody had, I would say, at least the highest was 3 offers for our whole senior classroom. I ended up at Cal Poly, and I was blessed with the opportunity, so I took the opportunity that I had. I did what I had to do at Cal Poly. I was recruited by Jeff Anderson, who ended up going to the Cleveland Browns probably roughly a week right before I got there. So I ended up playing under Asa Jackson, which gave me some great knowledge. He's now the receivers coach at Cal Poly. But I took the opportunity I had. I didn't complain at all. There's not really much I can do in that situation. So I took what I had, and I did what I could do.
Javion, we've seen you rise, you know, obviously from the Oakland Athletic League to Cal Poly, now San Jose State, now to Texas. It feels like when you turn the tape on, you play with a chip on your shoulder that continues to grow at each level. Talk a little bit about what your motivation is each step. And of course, you know, what that chip is like whenever you go out there and we see the interceptions, the stats don't lie. You're a pretty darn good corner.
Thank you. My motivation and my chip is really my family, right? They're still back in Oakland. And my goal is to get them out of Oakland, doing whatever I can on the field. And the chip on my shoulder is I'm undersized corner from Oakland, California. I mean, I'm not supposed to be playing football, right, on one of the biggest stages, right, most people would say. So I use that as a motivation. I'm going to do what I can at all levels. The SEC, from the Big Sky to the Mountain West, is just a bigger name, right? Just talked about more. Everybody's still Division I at the end of the day. So that's really it.
Well, Javion, I got to introduce you to someone real quick. So you're an undersized corner, you say. Right. Well, I got news for you. The guy down here in the bottom that's giggling a little bit is a man named Rod Babers, who happened to be one of the better undersized corners the University of Texas has ever had, was drafted in the NFL, played a little bit in the league as well. And I know Rod has been dying to talk to you, ask you about technique and things like that. So, Rod Babers, I'm introducing you to Javion Cole. Go ahead, bud.
I appreciate that, Bobby, man. Hey, Javion, yeah, man, I'm a fan now, too. I've been watching your game, and I like the patience in your game as a DB. And let me know about that. Is that patience something as a DB? Is just from confidence, or is that your technique? Because I think a lot of DBs, especially when they're playing off coverage, you know, they tend to want to get out of there, give up too much of that cushion. You don't give up too much of that cushion, man. You're not afraid to let your eyes take you where the football is going to be. Your eyes take you where your feet are going to go. I love that about your game, man. Explain that patience in your game to me.
I mean, I feel like patience is the key to success playing our position. As you know, you may know that already, but patience is going to get you to where you want to be. Playing off man is really being able to visualize, to see. It really starts with knowing the opponent, right? That's where my patience comes from. And then confidence plays a huge part in it, too. If you're confident out there, I feel like there's nothing that can be achieved if you're confident. You know what you're doing. You know what your opponents are doing. Then I play very slow. Not very slow, but I play patient because I don't think – I'm not too worried about getting beat deep, right? If you're going to beat me deep, it's because of what I've done. It's not because of what the receiver has done, right? And then everything underneath, I'm willing to let the catch happen. But a 5-yard catch with a tackle, I mean, I'm not too worried about that. If that's how y'all going to beat us, y'all going to have to beat us that way, right?
Yeah, the strength of your game, I think, is your off coverage, whether you be in zone or man. So break it down to them. How often did you play at the line of scrimmage and press? Because I didn't get a chance to see much of your game film. What you guys playing? Did y'all play a lot of press coverage?
Say it again. You're going in one more time, please.
Did you guys play a lot of press man, a lot of bump and run, press man at the line of scrimmage?
I mean, we were given the opportunity to do what we wanted to, up to our comfortability, right? A lot of people would say that I don't press a lot, but when I do press, I mean, I dominate, right? I really don't have a problem playing press, man. That comes with the patience and the confidence too, right? I feel like that's something I'm going to work on during this offseason, right, this time before we get to camp and while we're in camp before season starts. But,
Hey, Javion, you've had a penchant for finding the football. Your first 2 years – in college football, you had 4 interceptions your first year, 3 interceptions last year. Where does that come from? Is that more than just patience? Is that just having a thought about where the ball might be headed?
I think that's really just the grit. Like that's the grit in me, right? It's either attack or be attacked, right? And if you wait for the receiver to go get the ball, 9 times out of 10, he's going to go get that ball from you. So I think that's really it.
I've got one for you here, Javion. Going to your recruitment, of course, when Texas started to call you a little bit, twofold here. First, who was that coach that reached out originally and got you kind of on the campus a little bit? And then we chatted a little bit as well. You had an official visit set up for Auburn the week after your Texas official, yet you made the decision to commit to Texas. What was it about that visit that allowed you to sit back and say, all right, this is the place that I want to go play football at next season?
Well, for your first question, the coach that reached out to me was Coach Nansen, right? He reached out to me. I think I hit the portal Thursday. He reached out to me that Friday. He set up a home visit, and then we set up a visit from there. And Texas really asserted the dominance when it came to recruiting, besides everybody else. And then on my visit here at Texas, right, it's a lovely city. It's Texas, right? But talking ball, like, it's a scheme that I've played in before, right? The biggest thing for me is going to be able to learn calls and signals and understand what our goal is as a defense, right? Then it's the opportunity to play at another level, right? I'm not going to turn down the opportunity to play at another level. Most people would say during the recruiting stage, weigh out your options and take your visits. But I'm at the point now I'm getting towards the upperclassmen stage where there's not any games to be played when it comes to this. I know what my goal is, and I know where I need to be done.
I got to say this, Javion. All three of us went to Texas. You're now your first day, really, probably moved into the dorm, et cetera. I think that I can speak for CJ and Rod. We see that headboard behind you. That definitely looks like a dorm headboard you've got with that light on it, right? Other side. There you go. Is that the headboard? What dorm are you staying in? Where are you living on campus? That sort of thing.
No, I'm not officially moved in until tomorrow.
Until tomorrow? Okay, so you're in a hotel still.
Yeah.
You're waiting to move in. It's a hotel room. I'm in a hotel room right now too, Rod. I'm down here at Dustin. Javion, most exciting thing for you as you take this step up, I mean, you went from high school to Cal Poly, which was an FCS school, right, from a competition legend. You went to San Jose State last year, and now you're taking a step to the SEC. Any concerns for you or any thoughts about that? Or is that just what you wanted to do and one of the reasons why you decided to go to Texas?
My biggest concern for me is right now, well, it's not a concern. It's what I plan on doing regardless, no matter where I played at, what level. It's the gain weight, right? Playing against bigger backs, got to be able to tackle and wrap up, right? Most teams, they're going to see me out there, probably try to test the perimeter, which I don't have a problem with. They do what they're going to do. But that's really my biggest concern, right? Playing at the SEC, like, that wasn't where I was designated to go, right? It just so happened to be, right? So I'm going to showcase what I can do no matter what level it is.
Hey, Javion, how many of the other DBs have you gotten a chance to talk to, whether that be, I don't know, via social media, whether that be getting guys' numbers? How many guys have you gotten acquainted with yet because you just got on campus?
Well, I really just got added to the group chat, I would say, this morning, right? Haven't really tapped in with anybody yet, so.
San Jose sounds like a fun place to play some college ball. Are you excited for this summer heat coming up, Javion?
Oh, brother. I'm ready for the rude awakening.
Yeah. It's coming quick, isn't it? Next, what is it, June 2nd?
Monday morning.
Morning. All right. Yeah. Hey, Javion, you've got 2 years left. Is that right? You're a true junior. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
You plan to try to be here 2 years, or you thinking that you're going to try to be one and done in Austin? Hopefully,
I'm thinking one and done. But if two is what it is and what it takes, then 2 years is what it is.
Gotcha. Nice. Well, Javion, thank you so much, buddy.
Thank you. I thank y'all for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you, Javion.
Have a good one, buddy.
That was great. I mean, tells me right away, Rod, that patience that you see in the tape, knows all about it. That's a big strength in his game, whether it be press man or off coverage. Either way, it gets results and he gets interceptions. That's what Texas has been missing in that defensive backfield, specifically from the cornerback spot.
Totally agree. And the thing that he said that I really liked, he said, And I didn't want to, I was going to ask him, but I felt like he would either choose not to answer or it'd be divulging too much information. He said he played in the system before. So I played in the system before. I was like, oh, what system is it? You know what I mean? Describe the system to me. Break it down for me a little bit. Might be divulging too much information. But I think the system, honestly, is that he's played in some match quarter systems. He's played where they're playing some cover four, some cover three. And I was right. I watched a lot of film on him, and they didn't have him playing a ton of bump and run. And so he says that's something he's going to work on. Also something I wanted to, you know, in a very delicate way, get to. All right, I'm going to say, hey, man, you need to work on bump and run coverage. But he does, just not that he can't do it, not that he's not capable of it, but that he hasn't, they didn't ask that of him at his other spot. And I think Texas wants to be that. But right, if he's got that same kind of patience that he's got when he's playing off coverage in his technique at the line of scrimmage, he's gonna be nice up the line of scrimmage too. Even though he's undersized, hey, I was undersized and I was a technician at bump and run coverage. Loved it, and I think he could potentially have that in his game. And we still don't really know why he was under recruited. He still didn't really answer it.
He sounded like he didn't know why, Rod. I mean, yeah, he's in the state track. He had like six interceptions, multiple kick returns for touchdowns as a senior, and was in the state track meet. In the relays, in the 100 meter. I mean, how does he not end up highly recruited? I mean, it's kind of crazy. Hey, but before we go further, I want to get back to a couple of the questions that you had, Rod, as far as I got to ask you what you think the top rivalries are going to be in the SEC. But before we do that, I want to say thank you to our sponsor, Andy Ludicky of MyPerfectFranchise.net. If you're looking to get into business ownership, want to leave the corporate rat race, own your own business, it's possible that the franchise model might be right for you. If you're going to go in that direction, there's one person to call, and that's Andy Ludicky at MyPerfectFranchise.net, 404-973-9901. Again, Andy at MyPerfectFranchise.net. He's got a great system, takes you all through the questions you'll have to ask yourself, and then gets it all down and gives you a result. Let you know which ones may be the best fit for you. Again, 404-973-9901. So, Rod, CJ said Texas OU is as good as it gets. The other ones kind of ebb and flow based on how good the teams are. What do you think?
I think Texas OU is going to be – I'm a little biased, of course, at the top of the list, but the Kim Kardashian, Nicki Minaj, Serena Williams size, Cardi B size, Megan Thee Stallion size. But this year, I do think that – I think Texas A&M game will be bigger than the Texas OU game just for this year because they rekindled the rivalry. Otherwise, Texas OU will always be bigger. This year, though – and A&M might be better, actually. Who knows? They're projected to win more games. So this year, I think it actually could be bigger just because we haven't seen it in so long.
Hey, I got to add this. You mentioned the A&M rivalry today, Del Conte, Rod. Mm-hmm. Chris Del Conte said, look, somebody asked, are you ever want to take Texas A&M back to Thanksgiving night or Thanksgiving Ooh. Day? And he said, well, back then, it was us and the Cowboys, the Dallas Cowboys, playing on Thanksgiving. Now there's three NFL games. He goes, but Friday might be nice. Just put that under your hat a little bit. It means it has likely been discussed that eventually that game might be the day after Thanksgiving where it can get, you know, maybe be the only game of the day or the only – major game at that point in time, and Saturday where it's at this year.
I don't truly remember those Thanksgivings all too well where you watch the Cowboys and then Texas and Texas A&M. Listen, I do, but I was again like 12, 13, 14, whatever. I didn't fully get it then. But now from an outsider looking in at the Egg Bowl, one of the larger rivalries in the SEC, how often do you watch that on a Thanksgiving? How often will SEC schools tune into a Texas A&M and Texas game fighting against the NFL on that Thanksgiving evening? I think it's a good idea for the standalone time that Friday afternoon where you can then kind of give it another appetizer of football going all the way into that Saturday at the end of the week. I think it's a great idea. And I know the history, the tradition of Thanksgiving, it's sacred in a lot of households in Texas, mm-hmm. especially if they're split, right? That's kind of the fun in this game altogether. To me, it makes a lot of sense. You know, don't fight the NFL because the NFL will swallow you up.
Yeah, they're not going to fight the NFL. CDC made that clear, CJ. But that doesn't mean Friday's not on the table.
I love it.
Yeah, I do too. I like that. All right, let's get to a couple of questions. Brandon here has a super chat. Thank you, Brandon, for the super chat. Really appreciate it. Brandon wants to know, this is probably more for CJ. Y'all got to give me your top three players you can't wait to play with in the new EA college football game. Mine will definitely be Colin Simmons and Jaden Blue. I want to know what the rating is going to be. We talked about this a little bit. I can't wait to see what they rate. Like, who's the highest rated defensive player? Could be Anthony Hill. They can make a case for Jahde Barron if you want to. You can make a case for a couple of other guys, I'm sure. Then there's, you know, how I want to know what we don't know. Arch is not going to be on the game, but whoever the backup quarterback is going to be. And they'll have him, you know, the Arch's number. You know, what's Quinn's rating is going to be, what that player's number rating is going to be. So the ratings really interest me, but I've heard a lot of really cool details about it. So yeah, I'll go with Quinn because he's got to be really good. He's got to be the highest rating on the team. Him or Kelvin Banks, actually. I take that back. So it might be Kelvin Banks who's the highest rated on the team. I can't play with Kelvin Banks, so that's not fun. I'm not going to play with Kelvin Banks. I'll play with Quinn. It's going to be Quinn. And Jaden Blue's probably going to be one of them too because I hear the run game is – it's really like the graphics are unbelievable when it comes to the run game on the new college football game of grades. And defensively, well, I'm always a safety, so I'll probably move some things around. I'll probably, you know, play with Makuba most of the time. I always play with the safety when I'm playing the game. I usually do.
I'm excited with it. I talked with a Bengal the other day, a good friend of the program here at On Texas Football. He got a chance to play the game. About a week ago, and he told me, listen, all the graphics, all the videos that you've seen so far kind of leaked out. Of course, we saw that cool video of DKR kind of panning across what the stadium would look like in the game. He says it looks even better when you play the game. The gameplay looks fun. Of course, the graphics, the fans, the details, fight songs, whatever, all a big part of the game. They all look great. So I'm excited for it. We've talked about this every show, basically, Rod, about when this game's coming back out. But to answer the point, I love speed. Jaden Blue in this game is going to be electric to use. You can throw him out in the slot, run a slant, catch and go. That's going to be a fun one. I think Anthony Hill talking about speed in the middle of that defense is going to be very fun. I'm a linebacker user on defense, so I'm all about finding that star in the middle of the field and seeing what I can do with him. Anthony Hill is going to be a good one as well. So those are my two guys on either side of the ball. Of course, Quinn will be fun, and I do think Trey Moore is going to have a sneaky high rating in this game too, despite being a little undersized, whatever. 20 and a half sacks, 22 and a half sacks in the last 2 years. That means something.
Yeah, that's a good point about Trey Moore. All right, I won't even ask Bobby. Bobby, you want to talk about the game, get video game stuff?
Dude, did I tell you this yesterday, Rod? I can't remember I told you this. My only thing about the video game, guess who is a big gamer? Steve Sarkisian.
There we go.
Wow. Sark,
you know what Sark told the folks at Sirius yesterday? I was actually watching a radio interview live. So I was sitting down watching, listening to Steve Sarkisian actually as he's speaking, you know, going into the radio. And he said that he used to be a major gamer in college.
Wow.
With the NCAA football game. And somebody said, well, who'd you play with? BYU? And he goes, heck no. He goes, I played with Florida State. They had all the players back then. He was like, I know I played at BYU, but I wasn't going to play with our team. Not when I could play with Florida State. and then he said something like, we'll have to put the sticks down one time and do the, whatever. And I said, and the guy goes, oh, you used the term sticks. You really did play. I thought you guys, so no, I don't play. I've never really played that game much beyond a couple times in passing, but you two might have to challenge Sark to a little NCAA football, it sounds like.
I got to tell you, you want to auction off a cool experience at like a charity function, playing the game with Sark would somebody would pay big money for it. I guarantee you. It'd be a really cool experience because I'd want to play with Sark. Because I, you know, and how about this? EA Sports, now thinking about it, because you're right, Bobby, these coaches now, this is a different generation of coaches. They're relatively young. You know, we're kind of, you know, these coaches now, they were gamers back in the day, right? Yep. Sark's favorite artist is Tupac, right? So they're a younger generation of coaches. And I wonder now if you can get a few coaches that played the game to actually play the game for a promotional idea and actually play against each other. That would be freaking sweet. That'd be pretty cool.
Sounds like we need to call John Bianco and pass it up the tree.
Right, you got your marketing cap on once again. I see it today too. But yeah, that game is going to be on in that locker room at Moncrief 24/7. It's going to be be some heated games going on. It's going to be fun to build up, of course, to the season, and then you might have to see that thing disappear because, of course, then it's all business going on once that first ball is kicked off.
Oh man, trust me, I remember the game. Man, there was so many broken. And whether it be Sims, the quarterbacks get the most upset in terms of playing the game because they think they got control over it when they really don't got control. It's like, dude, no, it's not the three-step read in the actual game. I know you're upset because he ran the wrong route, but he should be there, Rod. They're the ones who get really upset about it. But no, I remember you're right. Hours that we would devote to playing the game and then watching other players play the game. So you're right, Coach. He's going to police and regulate that a little bit. I will say this too. I did hear, and you got to explain this to me, CJ. Mo Bamba, the song Mo Bamba, right? It's in the game apparently, and they were trying to get all the really cool songs that are part of the in-game experience or in-game atmosphere for different programs around the country. They couldn't get all the licensing because man, you can't afford all that. But they did get Mo Bamba. Interesting enough that Mo Bamba was made about Mo Bamba, right? Lifetime Longhorn Mo Bamba. How come that song became a tradition at other universities and other programs, but not at University of Texas, where Mo Bamba went and he's the inspiration for the song? How is that even possible that we have not made it a thing, but now we can't because it's a thing other places, but it's in the song, it's in the game, excuse me. Because it's a song that I think like Penn State plays or somebody like it. It's either Michigan or Penn State, one of those Big Ten teams. How come we didn't adopt it as one of our songs, as in-stadium songs?
I think that's a great question. How it slipped all the way up to Penn State, who knows? But to the point, I think Texas does do a great job before games, getting the crowd hyped up. They do a great job at the third quarter. You know, get your bachelor's degree, get your master's. Most of all, get your horns up. That's awesome. I think the crowd loves that as well. And we've seen, you know, in between periods or in between timeouts, they'll play the Don't Stop Believing, get the fans going. Would be really cool if they got the drones involved as well. Now, what I did hear is each school submitted four options or four little characteristics about their stadiums, whether it be the mascot, where, you know, the chants begin, the fans, the hand signs, whatever. Oddly enough, Enter Sandman by Virginia Tech did not make it. But anytime you play a whiteout at Penn State, it does sound like Mo Bamba will be played. And I think it's great. Of course, you know, it's really cool when each individual school has that one moment speaking outside of the game. Like, forget the game for a minute. When you talk about the coolest atmospheres in all of college football, it's very hard to not look at a whiteout at Penn State when they play Mo Bamba, Wisconsin when they play Jump Around. I mean, there are some really, really cool environments. Florida State, when they got the sphere, I know I'm messing this one up, but when they spiked that in the middle of the dirt, you're riled up, right? That's really exciting. A&M, when they had Power playing before they scratched that song, talk about as cool of a field entrance as there was when that stadium was as packed as it could be. I'm really excited to see, you know, what this new era of SEC entrances, kind of stadium oddities, what that will entail for the Texas football program and the fans that are able to make the trip because of Kenton. I mean, you're playing the best of the best now. There is no time to sit back and say, oh man, we get to go up to Ames or we get to go to Manhattan or Lawrence. No. You're going to the best places in all of college football, and I couldn't be even more excited for that.
Hey, yeah, I love it. There may be one or two. You talked about going to Lawrence or Ames or Manhattan. The Big 12 was replete with trap games. Now you got Florida, Georgia, Arkansas on the road, A&M. There's not as many trap games. That's all the Big 12 was for 15 years, guys. We're just trap game after trap game.
You basically are leaving the Home Alone house, Bobby. That's exactly what it is. Anywhere you turn, there's something ready to hit you in the face. You're leaving that. Well, that's the Big 12, is the Home Alone house.
I like that. I like and that.
We got to find some mansion, whatever it might be. Maybe might be the Playboy Mansion over here in the SEC. I mean, these guys, that's where you want to be. You want to be in that area. That's where all – it's good looking. It's shiny. It's got all the glitz and the glamour. Oh, and they got some pretty darn good football, right?
Yeah, to your point, though, Bobby, and to your analogy there about the Home Alone house there, CJ, they always underestimated their opponents, right? It was like, oh, that's Iowa State. Oh, that's K-State. Oh, Texas will take care of them. That's Oklahoma State. Ain't nothing to worry about. It's like, no, those programs had really good, savvy coaches like, you know, Macaulay Culkin and Home Alone will set them little traps for you. And you're like, damn, what you mean? Three high safeties? I didn't expect to see that. And you're right. I love that. And now you got the big games, though. Now you got way more big games. Now you got like four, five big games this year. You got three. Remember, and I love that Sark said this. He was happy they added two rivals. But now those are two big games. You got a circle before the season started. So you got three rivals now that you're facing. You got the big non-conference game against Michigan. You got the Georgia game. Now you just brought – used to have trap games. Now you just got big games. I love it. Love big games.
You go after picking on a 10-year-old boy home alone to maybe trying to pull off a bank heist, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's a little different. It is. That's a great point. Yeah, be ready. No doubt. Jeff here. Thank you, Jeff Carey, for the super chat. Oh, man, thank you very much. That's sending a virtual hug. A future fun rivalry could be UT Orange. No doubt. Totally agree with you. There's so many gifs and memes we can put together about UT and lowercase UT, all that kind of stuff. The orange. Yes, Jeff. Good point.
Here's something I'm excited and kind of more eager to see how the SEC goes about the University of Texas and Oklahoma joining the conferences is how often will each school play each school in, future scheduling, right? You know, that's kind of been one of the bigger issues in the SEC is you have the divisions, you got the East, the West, you know, A&M and Texas have played Georgia the same amount of times since Texas and A&M joined the conference. Will Texas be able to play a Vanderbilt, a Missouri, an Ole Miss, a Mississippi State? Like, how often do y'all think is the right amount of time for that to happen? And again, I know Del Conte earlier today also, you know, kind of pushed a little bit for a 9-team conference schedule as well. If that's the case, Bobby, do you have any idea or any, you know, kind of desires for what that future scheduling might look like?
So I think, Chris, you're right. Chris did say that today, CJ. He mentioned that he personally would prefer a 9-game set schedule starting in 2026. I don't necessarily think the rest of the SEC looks at it that way. And the reason why is twofold. Florida, Georgia, and Texas OU are the only two games in the entire conference that every year are played at a neutral site. So the real reason Chris Del Conte wants 9 regular season home games or regular season SEC games is so he can always get 4 SEC home games in Austin. And then he and Joe Castiglione can figure it out how that game and whoever the home team is in Dallas, we all know it's kind of irrelevant. And so Del Conte wants 4 SEC home games and at least 3 non-conference home games out of the 4, whatever he can get, right? So he'd have 7 home games and sell tickets like that every year. But Texas and OU and Florida and Georgia are the only ones that have neutral site games because Georgia, Florida's played in Jacksonville, Florida.
Did Texas A&M and Arkansas, did they not renew that?
Well, no, they could be. I'm sorry, Texas A&M.
Because I know that was up in the air, Bobby. I
forgot about that game because to your point.
Who does, right?
Yeah, everybody forgets about it. But my point to y'all on that is this. That would still only be 6 of the 16 teams.
Yeah, that makes sense. It makes total sense.
That would be the majority would still have would still probably prefer 8 because guess what? More teams get into bowls. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what this really comes down to. Yeah. The SEC, a lot of them will schedule four. I don't want to call them all cupcakes, but some of them aren't. They'll schedule four weaker teams, and then if they can just go 3-5 in conference or 2-5 and 2-6 in conference, they're in a bowl game because they got six wins.
Hey, that Music City Bowl pays the same.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think there's a couple things Chris wants that Chris may not get. You know, this is not the Big 12 anymore. We're not in Kansas anymore. And so the 9-game schedule is one of them. And the other one is it deals with collectives, NIL collectives. Del Conte made a little bit of news today as well. Not everybody caught on to it, but including Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, every other coach I've talked to or heard from, an athletic director, has not said they would prefer for NIL to come in-house or stay out operated by a third party. Okay. The only school here this week that said they would prefer it to come in-house is Texas. Okay? Mm-hmm. Everybody else has been non-committal. Let's figure it out. You know, very open. And so again, Chris may not always get what Chris wants, you know, and those are the two current things I would circle where he might not get what he wants. That's my, you know, that's reading between the lines for me, whatever you want to call it. Things to watch out for. 9-game schedule. I think it's going to be 8, unless I'm just surprised by 2026. And then NIL, whether it stays as a third-party organization or moves in-house, I'm not sure that the rest of the SEC would agree with Chris Del Conte.
Nice. Good stuff.
I prevent a lawsuit. Shoot.
Yeah.
That's true. Okay, here's a super chat from Colin Davis. Thank you very much for the super chat. Colin Davis says here, I guess I can get in on this too. How long is an average at-home recruiting visit? And what goes on during those visits? Is it only football talk, small talk? From my experience, been a long time. So I don't know, visits might have changed. But not as much football talk. I mean, because a lot of the visit is for mama and for dad. And I mean, what are they going to do in their corner and tell you what a great football player you are? You've been told that by all the coaches. So the home visit, for at least the ones that I got a chance to experience, was about convincing mom and dad, getting them on board. And yeah, it's less football talk. I mean, they don't talk a lot of X's and O's, not a lot of talk about how they're going to utilize you. I mean, Mac Brown sat on my mama's couch, drank her sweet tea, complimented her sweet tea, talked about how great it was. And she told him, I just want him to graduate. I just want him to get a degree. If you can promise me he's going to get a degree, I'll make sure he comes. And she said that in front of my face. I'm like, Mom, I've made my decision. And she's like, you going to promise me he's going to get a degree? And Mac was like, I will promise you your son will graduate from the University of Texas. And that's all my mama wanted to hear. And nobody really had said that, which you would think they would throw that out there if they hadn't. But Mac said that and backed it up. Years later, Mac Brown was the one that said, hey, you need to get back in school. Go see Brian Davis, go get enrolled, and I got my degree as a result. So he did, actually. I told my mom that. She was like, I knew Mac was a man of his word. So she's really like, Mac fans to this day. So to me, that home visit about mom and dad, and, you know, I mean, anybody being in your home is intimate, right? That's an intimate thing, to be in somebody's home. And if somebody's uncomfortable in your home, you can tell. It's like, it's one of the things that naturally in your home, because you're so comfortable. When they're uncomfortable, you're taken aback. Like, whoa, how can I make you comfortable, man? Well, you need something to drink. He's like, put your feet up, take your shoes off, whatever it is. And if there's something about a coach that can make themselves at home in your home and about how they relate to you. And Mac was brilliant at it. I hear Sark is great at it. Obviously, Deshaun Choice is probably really good at it. Some coaches are really good at that, and some coaches are not so good. They're a little awkward. You know what I mean? They're in your home and they're a little stiff in the home. And my mama wanted you to relax. And Matt came in there and relaxed and hung out and kicked it and talked and, you know, talked about, you know, his mama and talked about Sally and all this kind of stuff. And that's kind of what my mama wanted to hear. She wants to know that basically her son is going to another parent and that parent is going to look after me kind of like that. And Max said all the right things. Oh, yeah, I'll call you when he ain't going to class. Oh, yeah, don't worry. If he's acting up, I worry. Oh, darn, if he's homesick, he ain't coming home. We're going to force him. All the things that mama wanted to hear, Max said. And I think that's what those home visits are for. But I'll give it to Bobby and CJ. I know they have their own kind of take.
I had a question for you. How long were your home visits, Rod?
Oh, that is good. I'm going to say was probably, oh, man, I want to say the ones I remember were probably close to like probably 45 minutes to an hour, somewhere like somewhere around there. About 45 to an hour, somewhere around there, that I can remember. It was a long time ago, like I said. And yes, the famous line Mac delivered. Mac's a line guy walking out of my garage, and he's leaving, and I'm walking him out, Yevsky, and then Mac walked back and said, "Rod, I can't win the national title without you." And then he turned around and walked away. That was the last line he said to me and just left me there speechless. And I was like, he needs me. I'm the missing piece. I thought I was a missing piece for Mac to win the national title. He probably dropped that line on everybody, but it worked with me because that's what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear that somebody needed me to put them over the top to win a national title. And that was the goal. So it worked. And that's part of it too, right? Knowing what the recruits and what the parents, knowing what they want to hear and being able to, you know, address that. And I think Mac did a really great job of it, obviously. So
I got to say this, Rod. So, having followed recruiting for as long as I have, right? You hear all kinds of stories. The fun ones aren't the ones that, you know, where Barry Switzer sits in Billy Sims' bed, Billy Sims' house, or I think it was, I don't know if it was a trailer or a house at that time, for 4 hours or whatever, right? Wow. Those are the fun ones. Or Ken Dabbs stayed at the hotel next to Earl Campbell's house for, you know, a week prior to signing. And those are the fun ones, right? The ones that I remember, though, are the ones where the coach, I used to talk to all kinds of assistant coaches from all over the country, right, as I was covering recruiting. The ones I remember are the ones where he goes, well, he talks to me at 6:45 and they have a 7 o'clock home visit, you know, scheduled. And the guy calls me at 7:05. Well, we're not getting him. He told us. they didn't break bread. They shook hands and left, you know. Oh, no, coach, I decided I'm going to. Is there anything we can do to? No. Sorry, man. I'm doing. So my mom and dad, they ain't even coming. Those are the ones that made me, because, you know, these coaches, they're flying from everywhere and all over the place. The recruit meets you at the door and said, no thanks. guy has his head coach there, you know? That's his head coach with him. He's embarrassed because he can't even get in the front door.
Can't even get in the front door. Oh, man. That's great. Yeah, you're right. I made sure that the teams that were coming to visit, that I was genuinely interested in those teams. I wouldn't even let it get that far. But, man, that's like – you're right. There's some crazy recruiting stories. There's some that I've heard. I won't even repeat on these airways that are wild recruiting stories. I didn't really have any that were that wild. David Keith Williams says, Rod Babers, everything Coach Brown said to your mom to get you committed to the Texas Longhorns was what that Army recruiter said to my mom to get me committed to the United States Army. Yeah, you know what? Might have been the same script. It might have been the same exact script. Mama just wants to know, hey, you going to take care of my baby, and is he going to come back here a man? And Mac was like, yeah, I guarantee you that. And the Army, hey. They probably said the same thing. Mac backed it up, though. I'll say Mac backed it up, no doubt. Thank you guys for the super chats, though. We appreciate those. All right, a couple of questions here while we got some time. I know we're running close up against it here. So Shivan Patel wants to know, how many TDs will Quinn have this year, gentlemen? How many TDs, passing TDs, will Quinn have this year?
So he only had 22 a year ago. He only had 22 a year ago. I looked it up earlier in the show. There were only two quarterbacks with 40 touchdowns. That was Bo Nix and that was Michael Penix. Both of them went in the top 15. Both of them older, experienced guys on the West Coast, where that style of play might not have been met with the greatest of defenses, just to put it bluntly. At the same point, I think Michael Penix actually led the country in passing attempts, if I remember correctly. So they hooked the ball over there an incredible amount. I think it's fair to start at 33 to 35. I think I had 32 a year ago. as my prediction for Quinn. And this is, again, expecting Texas to play over what they're allotted right now for their regular season, right? You expect Texas right now to be in contention for an SEC title game. You expect Texas to be in the college football playoff game right now. So there's potentially 13 games there, maybe even 14 if you're really good. And if you're very, very good, there's 15. I think 33 is a safe number. And if you play 12 games, that's just under three game. Texas led the country with 33 field goal attempts a year ago. You cut that in half, there's a good opportunity that you're adding 7-8 touchdowns alone from that. And again, I think Quinn was six games a year ago, only having one touchdown. I don't think that's going to happen again. You can talk about kind of the new room of wide receivers, obviously a new tight end, some new running backs still getting acclimated to that larger role. I do think you'll eclipse 30 touchdowns for Quinn this year. And I do think that's, I don't think that's crazy. That's 2.5 touchdowns per game. Can you do so? Yeah, you should be scoring 4 or 5 touchdowns a game against Colorado State, Louisiana early on, UTSA potentially as well. We know that Texas is going to be running the ball a lot as well. But hey, if you cut that red zone deficiency in half, there are so many other options for Quinn to find the end zone in that route. Oh, and he also missed 2.5 games, right? Like, stay healthy.
Yep, good stuff. That's exactly what I was going to say. Stay healthy in the red zone. That's why it could – you could see that number increase a lot. Stay healthy, playing all the games, and then the red zone issues, if they remedy those. Bobby, you don't think – you don't see 30? You don't see 30 for Quinn?
I don't see 33.
Okay.
Sark, you know, I don't know that Sark wants to run that style of offense his first year in the SEC.
Oh, interesting.
You know, I think he wants to be a little bit more. He's got a great offensive line, we think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think 33 is a little high. I mean, I was just looking up Jaden Daniels' stats. I mean, talk about, you know, NCAA football type numbers, 40 touchdowns and 4 interceptions last year. You know, I don't see that kind of year, you know. I think that Sark is going to be a little bit more deliberate. He has a more, you know, I think they just have a more deliberate style right now, given that all of these receivers are new, too. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about against Colorado State and UTSA and all these, you know, that's all well and good, CJ. Those are all games that are early in the year when I think they're just going to be getting started from a passing perspective. And if he has 3 passing touchdowns, I'll tell you what, he has 3 passing touchdowns against Kentucky, which sounds weird, right? But Mark Stoops he doesn't give up 3 touchdown passes that often, unless it's Georgia, apparently. But my point being, we'll see how it. There's not a lot of people that put up video game numbers passing. Now, Sark's quarterbacks have done it. Jaden Daniels did it last year. But not many do. Not many do.
No, it's a good point. Right. That's something to consider. And that Michigan defense is something to consider, too. I mean, that Michigan defense is going to be loaded. I don't know how many they're going to be lighting up that Michigan defense either. And the Georgia defense. Those are two really elite. Those will be top five defenses next year. The Texans will have to face. So, but I will say Sark usually is ready for those. He usually has his bag of tricks wide open for those big games. How about this one from my man CB? Shout out to my man CB. He wants to know how high could the 2025 class finish ultimately, guys?
Top that's 3 is what Jerry's saying. Yeah. That's what Jerry's saying.
I think 5 with top the way that things right looking right now is kind of the floor. I think that's fair. Of course, Texas in great spots for DeCorian Moore, Jamie French, Khalik Lockett, Michael Fasusi. You look outside of that, there's a number of really talented kids coming in as well. Defensive side of the ball, Kevin Wynn. Obviously, you have Brandon Brown, a guy that's expected to take a jump in those recruiting rankings once some real evaluators get out to go see him. He's a heck of a ball player. So I think top 5 is the floor. I think you could get up to top 3 again. It's going to take a really special class to scratch that or to top that. But, hey, you've got a good start. And I think with the guys that you're still in good positions for at the moment, that ranking and rating will certainly still look to rise as the summer months continue to heat up.
Man, three five-star receivers. So when Texas did get Roy Williams, B.J. Johnson, Sloan Thomas in 2000, they were – I went and looked at composite rankings, and they were considered back then five-star receivers. So Texas did get three five-star receivers in 2000. And I went to look at how many programs have gotten three five-star players at the same position. Happened more often than I thought. Tennessee did it in 2001. They got three five-star running backs in the same class. Jabari Davis, Derek Tinsley, and Cedric Houston. You remember those guys, Bobby?
I do, and none of them turned out. I will say this. So I don't know what – Sloan Thomas was definitely more lightly recruited than B.J. or Roy, Rod. So I don't know if Sloan was like a true – five-star, but BJ definitely was, and Roy definitely was. So where, I mean, I know they do the composites and all that stuff, and but I specifically remember like Sloan was really down to Texas and Notre Dame, I think, whereas BJ could have went anywhere, Roy could have went anywhere, etc. Hey, I want to ask you, mention this one time. When I say 30 touchdown passes, it's not a bad thing. I'm looking at Dak Prescott, pretty good quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty good quarterback. Had his team at one time in his senior year in college at Mississippi State, ranked number one in the country for a little while. Okay. Had him number – he only had 29 touchdowns his senior year. He was 28th for 29 and five interceptions. So, just telling you now, football's changed a little bit in 10 years. No doubt about it. But those numbers can be – difficult to come by, I think.
Still, Dak did have double-digit rushing, right? I do think, to your point, Bobby, Texas will look to rely upon those four returning offensive linemen and Cam Williams, right? They have Gunnar Helm, a more than capable blocker there. We know C.J. Baxter in year two is going to take that jump. And, of course, Jaden Blue with that speed, it makes sense to want to continue to pound and ground. But we've seen Texas go to those big-time defensive tackles as your fullbacks, and we don't quite yet know who that's going to be. So in those tight areas, do you rely on the offensive line? Do you rely on a third-year starting quarterback? It'll be interesting, of course. To your point, though, it is a tough, mark to get. And
I think it's fair to say 30 might be the over-under.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
If they're betting on it in Vegas, they're probably putting it 30, 31, something like that.
Yeah.
That's my point.
I'm interested to see what that line comes out to because, again, Quinn did have 22 a year ago. Malik in those two games that he started for had three. If you imagine Quinn had three as well, and then you take that number, you're at 25. If he finishes out Houston, maybe they find the end zone through the air on that drive that Malik led to the end zone. Who knows? Again, it's all hypothetical at this point, but – 30 feels right to me. I think 33, depending on how far Texas goes, is in reach. But again, if Quinn takes that leap, which we expect him to do, he did a great job in the spring staying composed, remaining confident. And that's the big thing is finding that groove with these wide receivers, getting them up to speed, and obviously understanding the playbook. That's going to be the main thing in all of this.
Yep, and I'm with you, CJ. Red zone efficiency could be huge. You can get another four touchdowns potentially. Just from red zone efficiency, just being, slightly below or above average because Texas was so bad in touchdown percentage in the red zone last year. All right, so we had a couple more questions before we got here. Before we do that, though, let's thank our wonderful sponsor once again for our Wednesday night live stream, My Perfect Franchise and Andy Ludicky.
Yeah, absolutely. My Perfect Franchise. Andy Ludicky has been helping people get into their own franchises for a decade now. Give him a call. 404-973-9901. He actually specializes in this. If you're looking to own your own business, control your own destiny, Andy's the guy you want to call. 404-973-9901 or send him an email, andy@myperfectfranchise.net. Thanks, Andy, and other sponsors like him that help make these broadcasts possible, as well as everybody that are joining us on these live streams, whether it's via podcast, on YouTube, Twitter, wherever you come in from.
All right, real quick to get a couple of questions before we get done here. Freshwater Cajun threw this out a long time ago, but I want to ask you guys about it. It says, y'all mentioned how there's a lot of development for O-line, D-line, both physically and skill. Could you go over how Banks and Murphy and others have developed over the years and what areas they have improved on? I think, number one, they're just emphasizing recruiting and acquiring more bodies on the lines of scrimmage, period. We know that when Sark came in, he talked about how they couldn't even have a real spring game because they didn't have enough scholarship offensive linemen. And now they have enough scholarship offensive linemen for them to run four different units at practice so the guys can get more reps. And the big humans, you know, emphasis and them prioritizing that. So I think more, and that's on the offensive side, but I think more that's been the focus. It's just bringing in more big bodies and emphasizing line of scrimmage, which is going to be perfect for your transition to a line of scrimmage league like the SEC.
That's exactly it. I mean, you go watch, Bobby, real quick. But those practices we were able to go see earlier this spring with Kyle Flood and those guys off to the side, that attention to detail from Coach Flood is the exact reason why we've seen this offensive line make the jump. What was the list, Rod, the top 100 players in college football that ESPN did? And Jake Majors came in at number 85 or 86. Yeah. Like, that doesn't happen if it's not for that attention to detail. So, of course, adding talented players like Calvin Banks, DJ Campbell, now Brandon Baker, that certainly helps. But that continued development has been all because of Kyle Flood and his staff in terms of what they've been able to do behind the scenes. And it's paid off. Christian Jones rising to a fifth-round pick. Jake Majors looking to continue his strong college career as well. It's all one day at a time.
Yeah.
Did you see this note here that Brandon Ralston put up?
Yeah.
I want to give CJ some love. You see this, Rod?
Thank you, Brandon. I want
to give CJ some love. You've been a great addition to the OTF squad, and I think you've really taken your place within the group. Hook them. Thanks, Brandon. We appreciate you, and we agree.
Thank you, Brandon. That's making me blush on a Wednesday night. Not many people do Rod that, so thank you.
Rod and I can be hard on people now. So can Jerry Hamilton. It ain't easy.
I agree with that. It ain't easy. Yep, and I was a fan of CJ before he even came on Texas Football with us. So I was already knew I was hitting up CJ every now and then, and me and CJ had crossed paths, and I told him way back in the day, dude, big fan, love what you do. So when we can make him part of the team, it was a no-brainer. And he's exceeded expectations. So I agree with you. Thank you guys for the super chat there. Oh, and one other comment, guys, before we get out of here, and I love this from Peyton Ross. Because we just got reminded of it again in the Javion Cole interview. The way Nansen has contributed can't go unnoticed. He said, didn't he say that Nansen was the first one to reach out to him? Yep. And do we get the 3D tackles that Sark desperately needed via the transfer portal without Johnny Nansen? I mean, I don't know if you get one of them. I don't know if you get all three of those guys because he has a connection, all three of them.
All three of them, Rod.
So, I mean, this guy's he's already paying huge dividends. And I think he's going to contribute even more. I've talked about this. The defense will be influenced by Johnny Nansen. His exotic looks at Arizona were fantastic, made them one of the best defenses in the country. Texas would be ignorant and stupid, and they're not. They're smart not to take advantage of the football knowledge that Johnny Nansen is going to bring to the table. And PK's a great student of the game. PK's a football theorist. When Gary Patterson came in, you can tell that Gary Patterson influenced him for the good. I think you'll get a similar influence from Johnny Nansen. He's not a guy that has a big ego. He's not about pride. He's just about the best product. So I think you're going to see some exotic looks, and you're wondering where they came from. Most likely it's going to be a Johnny Nansen influence. So
I'm wondering here, Rod. You asked me this thing when we first got started tonight. Who the best recruiter on the Texas staff is? Four guys in the portal is pretty strong in 3 months' work.
Yeah. That's a great point.
I mean, that's pretty strong work right out of the bat. So
I did not even think about that. Yeah, man. When Javion Cole said it, I was like, really? Johnny Nansen reaching out to Javion Cole too? So out of our transfer portal acquisition, we know that he's at least got ties or had part in recruiting four of them. And four that you need. Guys, those are the biggest positions of need, arguably, other than wide receiver that you needed were D tackle and cornerback, especially when Terrence Brooks left and Johnny Nansen had a hand in helping you fill those voids. So good stuff there. All right, guys.
Last point real quick, Rob, that goes to talk about his connections in the state of California, yeah. Right? That's an Oakland Athletic League MVP that goes under the radar, goes over to Cal Poly and then San Jose State. Again, he mentioned guys on his high school. Most offers were probably three, right? That's entirely flying under the radar to then hopefully becoming a one-and-done guy in the SEC. Talk about an arc. That's tremendous stuff, but that's not even on Texas's radar if it's not for the connections and the ties to the West Coast of Johnny Nansen.
No, I just love that these recruiters and coaches who do actually value relationships and not just value basically a player signing their letter of intent, because you can finish second and third now in a recruiting battle. And it actually means something now because, later on when that guy hits the transfer portal or is available in the transfer portal, he's going to remember, oh, man, I just loved Coach Nansen. No, Coach Nansen was cool. Or I remember this coach. He was great. And the only reason I didn't choose them was because this school offered a little bit more NIL, or this school was a little closer to home, or this school, whatever the reason was, had a system that I liked better. But now, man, finishing second, third in recruiting, ain't no shame in it, because you might end up being able to, get benefit from that connection a little bit later on. So I think it's fascinating how the transfer portals worked out that way. All right, gentlemen, any last words here before we get out of here? I know we got coffee and football tomorrow, correct?
Coffee and football tomorrow. We also have football theory, you and Bob Shiptonrod going at it, as well as the winning drive. And make sure you check out ontexasfootball.com, guys. Right now we're running a special $39.95 for an annual subscription to ontexasfootball.com. You have to use the promo code OTFOG. That's OTFOG. Come be an OG with us on Texas Football. I got a lot of coverage there from the SEC spring meetings. Let's end with this, Rod Babers.
Sure.
From Gerald Hamilton. An underrated rivalry in college football currently. Dabo Swinney versus the transfer portal. Everybody have a good night, guys. Rod, you sit us on, bud.
All right, folks. Remember, join us for Coffee and Football tomorrow. Also, the winning drive tomorrow. My man CJ and Bob should be going to join me for that one. Until next time, same time, same channel. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.